My condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Mel. This is Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 675. Dow futures down 105. NASDAQ futures down 18. I'm going to say that probably won't last. We're off to the races here. Looks like maybe till the end of the year, Kevin. Who knows? But looks like it's going to be a while. How are you?
Good morning.
It is always interesting when the Fed is just like everybody else. Once you start something that starts to feel good, you keep going at it, right? It's like the...
If it feels good, do it. I remember that expression.
Well, you know, if one beer is good, 15 are better, right?
Must be.
Yeah.
Like you said, everything in moderation, especially moderation.
Yes. I think it's including moderation. It was especially.
Including moderation, okay. Well, I'd go with especially.
Yeah. Hey, I watched some of Duke, Michigan State last night. It was interesting. Did you watch any of that?
I watched a little bit of it, but I kind of dozed off early. So,
well, there you
what'd
go.
You think?
Well, Michigan State looked the same as they did against the Irish. Looked kind of helter-skelter early on. Then all of a sudden, halfway through the second quarter, or the first quarter, they scored like every time. They were down 10, and they were up 7, just like they did the Irish. So,
I think Michigan State has a really good team. They have a really good defensive team. When they put the clamps on you, you better have guys that can beat good defenders off the dribble, because because they can get out and contest your spot up shooters, and there isn't much you can do about it.
Well, it was interesting watching. Let's say the two different...
And by the way, you better have a post-scoring threat, too, which Notre Dame doesn't.
Do they have anybody?
Oh, yeah. I think they'll figure it out and they'll be okay. But, they have some good players. I mean, what Hub put down 23 points or something like that against Michigan State.
They did pretty well in garbage time. They almost came back.
And they did well in garbage time, yeah. But, you know, they sort of changed the game, their approach to the game in the second half to some effect. I think in their case, what I mentioned about spot-up shooters before, you've got a lot of guys who are not going to go get their own shots, so you better have someone who can penetrate. Then, you know, if you don't have a guy you can feed in the post who draws double teams and then you can move the ball to your shooters, then the next thing you better have is someone who can attack the basket and draw defenders and then kick out. And on some of their better teams, that's exactly what they've had. As an example, the team with Pat Connaughton and Jaron Grant. Jaron Grant could attack the basket. He could get to the basket. He could finish if he had the path. But he was an outstanding passer, and he would just hit a guy in the corner, not just hitting the open guy with a timely pass, but putting it right at his chest so that it was an easy catch and shoot.
Well, just watching two games last night, there really is a difference in, shall we say, style, in the sense that Michigan State, well, they have the one guy who could have gone pro and didn't. So they have a pretty solid defense because they've been together for a while. Is much of a while.
And they emphasize it. You know, they emphasize it more than most colleges.
Well, I mean, you can't emphasize it if you're starting four freshmen, right? I mean, it's too early. So then, you know, I watched, well, I mean, I wasn't studying this, but I did it in, just in case you talk about it, so I knew something what I was talking about. I mean, Duke's got, like, six freshmen on the team. And Kentucky's got, what, six or seven? They got, like, one senior. And, you know, they think, lost to Kansas because they're winding around like they didn't know what they were doing. It's all this.
They did. Kansas beat them by three.
They came back pretty good, though, huh? They were down more than that earlier.
Yeah, it was a relatively close game throughout the second half, and Kansas held on to beat Kentucky.
But, I mean, their style obviously is get these young, real talented kids, and you're going to lose them, and you go recruit them again the next year.
By February, March, they're a pretty darn good team.
Yeah,
but in November, if you catch them in November, you can beat them.
Well, that's what Krzyzewski said.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it, Matt. And you know, the idea here is that you don't get real sophisticated. You know, if you're going to run a program where you need to be old, then guys are really going to be ready to contribute as juniors. Maybe as sophomores, but if you run a program like Kentucky does or like Duke does, then what you have to do is you have to teach a basic offense and some basic team defense concepts, and you're never going to get real sophisticated. And you count on talent, to be organized enough that your talent will win out.
Is that the financial equivalent of a pump and dump? Those two teams.
Actually, yeah.
Could be.
By the way, just to throw this out there, the Big Ten is really good,
yeah.
on paper anyway. They haven't started playing really good teams yet, except Michigan State last night and playing Notre Dame, who I agree with Kevin. I actually think Notre Dame might end up being a pretty solid team and could be a tournament team once they...
Yeah, but they lost three good guys. Who'd they bring in? Nobody?
I don't know. In that first half against Michigan State, or more specifically, the first 15 minutes of the first half against Michigan State, they were doing some things. They were moving the ball. They were hitting some outside shots. And I was like, okay, this looks like the Notre Dame of a few years ago. Once they get going. But just for our listeners, the Big Ten has three of the top five teams in the country right now in the AP. Michigan State's not one of them.
Yeah, that's what they're saying last night. They're like the fourth ranked team in the Big Ten.
Yeah, Michigan State's ranked eighth right now. And we all know that, you know, they could win the national championship. And also those three of those top five do not include, you know, some of the names that you would think, like Michigan, for example, or Maryland, or Ohio State, or Rutgers, or Indiana, or Purdue, who all might be good tournament teams, but are not anywhere near the top 10, let alone the top 5. Right now, they have Iowa number 3, Wisconsin number 4, and Illinois number 5, and those could probably be interchangeable. Granted, they haven't played anyone yet, so we'll see when they start playing. I know that those teams are playing the likes of, like, Illinois plays Baylor tonight. Baylor's ranked number 2 in the country. Iowa plays North Carolina and Gonzaga coming up, who are, you know, ranked number 1 and like, number 15. Wisconsin always plays a tough schedule. So we'll really start to learn about these teams soon. But that conference is going to be really tough this year.
Your buddy was doing the color last night. What's his name from his house, the guy with the toupee? What's his name? He used to be a coach.
Vitell?
Yeah.
He doesn't have a toupee. He's bald.
Well, he should have a toupee.
Would that look better or not?
I don't know.
It would be interesting.
It wouldn't in the wind. Just say. But
you ask who they brought in, Tom. They had they brought in a let's see. They had two freshmen who played not a ton of minutes on Saturday, but Matt Zona is a 6'9" forward, and they played the wing. Let me see what the heck is the guy's name? It's Tony Sanders, who was a big scorer and one of the leading scorers in Florida in high school. They are waiting for eligibility ruling on Trey Wirtz, who is a transfer, came in from Santa Clara, but when he decided to transfer, it was between Notre Dame and North Carolina what he would choose there. He's from Chapel Hill, or Charlotte, I think. He's from Charlotte. And then one of the other guys they added was a forward named Elijah Taylor, who I really thought would help them a lot this year because they need rebounding. But Taylor had a season-ending injury, so he's gone for surgery. But the last guy they brought in, and you saw him in the starting lineup, was Cormac Ryan, who was a transfer from Stanford, sat out last year after being a starter for Stanford as a freshman. So that's the add backs. It's not like they didn't bring in nobody.
Well, he's the last year he brought in like nobody, right? I mean, I just wonder if he's going the way of Digger, where this recruiting's gotten so unpalatable he doesn't even want to do it anymore, which probably would same thing would happen to me.
Well, there may be some of that. You know, that's entirely possible. You know, they're also, the Irish are also awaiting the return of Robbie Carmody, who was one of their highest-ranked recruits in the junior class. He kind of fell back to the sophomore class, but he's had two season-ending injuries, and then he's nicked up a little bit now. So that's one of those guys where you're wondering if he's ever going to play. And it's too bad, because every time he's gotten to play, he looks like a really good ball player. He's like a big guard or a wing.
Is he Bill Carmody's son?
No.
Okay, just wondering.
No, his father is his high school coach.
They were talking about some guy.
It was not Bill Carmody.
The name's kind of blur, and the people sort of blur, but they were talking about one of these freshmen. I think it was at Duke. Is this stuff happening? By the way, I don't know what I want to ask you. I think Vital said the guy's from Florida or someplace, but then he went to high school in West Virginia with an uncle or an aunt or somebody, went to some, I guess there's a powerful high school in West Virginia, and the guy was Mr. Basketball in West Virginia. Is like a sophomore, junior, and senior. And he looked incredible in Duke. I mean, the guy's nothing but talent. If it's the guy I'm talking about. I mean, they got some of these guys. Are they recruiting high school kids out of state now?
Well, in a way, yes. There are a number of prep schools, and in some cases, people go there because they want to play on great high school teams and be recruited, by the top schools. But the reason that those prep schools began to spring up is because you had guys who wanted to play basketball, wanted to play college basketball, and they needed to go someplace where they could get their grades up. So, you know, they'd kind of hole up at a prep school with some kind of academic rigor behind it, and get their grades up, get their test scores up, and all the while play basketball. And that's kind of morphed over the years into a situation where people are now saying, well, as long as they're getting all these great basketball players and need to get their grades up, what if I go there too and I can be among the great basketball players even though I don't need the grades?
If it's not public school, I guess you don't need a relative. Where do they live? On campus?
No, you can a lot of high schools will have dormitories on campus.
Jeez. Different.
Yeah, all they've done is move college basketball down to the high school level in some cases.
Well, what I wanted to ask you is on Friday, of course, if you have a pickup truck or a Suburban, you're everybody's best friend. Hey, you know, I got this table I got to move. Okay, well, that's no problem. I never mind. So we go and, of course, the guy who's helping move, his older brother's got two fake knees, so he can't move anything. The guy who's asked me to help, he's got a bad back. But fortunately, the guy's got this granddaughter who's in good shape, right? So very, very pleasant young lady. I started talking to her, and it turns out, I can just tell by looking at her, she's an athlete. And it turns out she's a soccer star. She was playing as a freshman. She was on the varsity team for high school and so forth. And I said, what's going on with the high school? I said, well, we're not sure what's going on there, if anybody's going to play or whatever, but she's playing constantly for this club team. And it's not AAU. It's another group that's gotten involved in girls soccer now. And she said, yeah, they're pretty much, as I play way more games for these people than I ever did for high school. And we almost, you care if high school
comes
back.
Yeah, it's been that way for quite a while. My brother's daughters, my brother Jeff's daughters did that too, where they did not play for the high school team, they played for the club.
And I said, well, if somebody wants to recruit you, who do they go through, the high school coach or the club? She goes, well, usually both, but now it's probably just the club. I mean, and so they're not AAU. Who are they? Just another, are they yoked together? Town to town, or Chicago have theirs, Indiana have theirs, or
the clubs are independently operated, so it's not who has theirs. Chicago area may have several clubs,
but it's not as organized as like the AAU basketball or volleyball in terms of the AAU.
Oh,
being
I think it is. I think it's every bit.
I misspoke. I didn't mean organized. I mean, but doesn't have the one leader like the AAU.
No, but I think if you look at, you know, just looking at the girls' sports, you know, you have the same kind of thing with softball. You know, there's a whole softball circuit. Now, I don't know how much of it, you know, how much it overlaps or preempts high school softball versus, you know, versus, what I want to say, versus the, you know, supplementing it, but you know, there's a whole traveling team circuit, and I once went over back when Notre Dame was in the Big East, and they were hosting the Big East tournament in softball. I don't know if you've ever gone to a college softball game, but they're pretty entertaining because they, you know,
it's good baseball.
Unlike college baseball, which can be pretty boring because you know the players aren't the greatest for the most part. These are, number one, the top players in their sport, and number two, the game just moves faster. Everything, you know, they just do everything more quickly. They don't, and not the delays, not the long counts, all of that stuff is part of it. And so I sat through a doubleheader, but I happened to sit, you know, just went in and parked my butt with behind a bunch of Louisville parents. And so we got to talking about the whole thing, and they were mostly from California, and they mostly, you know, they knew all of the opponents' players, they knew, and all of their own players, they all played on the traveling circuit in the out west at the same time, and so you know, there's just like this whole subculture of softball. I am sure it's the same way for every other sport, you know, whether it's soccer or whether it's
Well, who pays for that?
You know, college basketball, it doesn't matter.
Are they self-paying or are the parents ponying up, or both?
The parents are ponying up, which means, you know, varying by sport. The team will pay, you know, like for travel, for a bus or something like, you know, like that, and they probably have to do a lot of fundraising. But when the sport starts to require a lot of equipment, and of course when the parents get involved and they travel to all the games too, then you're talking about some significant expense and some significant time, you know, family time commitment behind the whole thing.
Well, when we come back from break, I got to
go to college for free.
We come back from break, I got a story about some kid. I think one of the first ones that did that was a hockey. I think, because a lot of high schools didn't have hockey. Anyway, SP Futures.
Yeah, they have juniors, yep.
NASDAQ Futures down 38. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason.
I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, North Bay Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Matt Warren on the board. Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us. We're talking some sports and the economics of young people's sports now. It's a lot different than it was when, even when you grew up, Matty, but certainly different than when I grew up. SP Futures down 11, NASDAQ Futures down 39, Dow Futures down 113. We had a big day yesterday, so this is just giving back a little bit so far. DAX down 48. They were up huge yesterday, so it's 0.3%. FTSE now 2 days in a row, though, is up 27.4%. CAC around down 12.2, so pretty quiet there. Nikkei up 13, call that flat. Shanghai down 2, call that flat. These guys were all up yesterday. Hang Seng down 35.1%. Just a way of review, yesterday Dow was up 185. After being up well into threes most of the day, it actually came down some on the close. S&P Futures up 40, NASDAQ Futures up 156. You actually could have made money yesterday on the downside by selling midday. You could have had a pretty good afternoon if you sold midday, even though we were still up at the end of the day. Bonds, we finally got a kick out of these bonds. They're up to 0.91%, from 0.85, where they've been stuck forever. Bund minus 0.52, again, that's a 4 basis point move to the upside. And Japan unchanged at 0.02. Oil down 21 cents, 44.34. Brent down 15 cents, 47.27. Natural gas up 3 cents, 2.91. RBOB unchanged at 122. Gold, which had a big rally yesterday, is moving up again today, up 740 to 1826. This got down almost like 1760, so it doesn't seem high at 1826, but a lot higher than it was. Silver up 4 cents, 24.13. Copper down a penny, wow, 3.45. Matty, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a pretty good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Looks like we just have a couple of issues to the south. On the Bishop Ford outbound side at Stony Island, there's an overturned semi on the southbound Stony Island feeder ramp that has the entrance ramp blocked with crews on the scene. Apparently, looks like a tanker semi fell over, and now a cleanup is in process, and that's causing some delays on the outbound Bishop Ford. And then just north of there, the Dan Ryan on the inbound side before 71st Street, there's an accident blocking the right lane. So there's some slight delays from that. But that's the only issues in the area, both down south. No issues coming in on the Stevenson or Eisenhower. Edens and Kennedy looking good. Lakeshore Drive in both directions is all quiet, and suburban tollways are quiet as well. Weather today, it's going to be a relatively pleasant day for December 2nd. Sunshine with a high of 44. Right now it's clear and 28 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 70 today. Right now it's clear and 42. In sports, the NFL is still planning to have its Thanksgiving moved to Sunday, moved to Tuesday, and now moved to this afternoon game.
Oh, it's back to this afternoon?
Yeah, well, it never left this afternoon of right now. This could change, of course. It's a fluid situation, but Baltimore versus Pittsburgh is still scheduled for 2:40 p.m. kickoff Central Time.
What does NBC have on tonight that they refuse to budget?
Good question, but that game is scheduled for NBC. Now, a couple more players have tested positive yesterday, from what I've read, so this game is still possible, you know, to move to later in the night or to be postponed altogether. But as of right now, it's still scheduled for 2:40 p.m., so you'll have a little afternoon NFL action on a Wednesday. And then later on tonight, if you can stay up for it, a great top five matchup, as I mentioned earlier, between number 5 Illinois and number 2 Baylor. That'll be on ESPN, but it's a 9 p.m.
Baylor's got one kid. It's spectacular, right?
Yeah, they're very good. They were good last year, too. They could have won it all last year if the tournament didn't get canceled. And by the way, don't look now, Chief, but the UIC Flames seem to have something cooking. They're now 3-0. They blew out Valparaiso yesterday, 66-50. And, you know, they haven't been good in quite a while, but it would be nice for a local team to catch fire. DePaul hasn't played a game yet, so UIC off to a great start.
Why is that?
I don't know. I'll have to look into it. I don't know if they had some positive tests or if their opponents have had some tests or positive results or what, but they haven't played a game yet.
The guys last night were all over this Gonzaga because evidently they're their usual team and they got somehow they landed some five-star freshmen that's evidently all world.
Well, I saw them, I watched them play Kansas and they dismantled Kansas. I mean, they killed them. And it wasn't even close. And I saw them play somebody else too who was like, you know, a solid team, not as good as Kansas, but like a good, you know, solid Power 5 team and they beat them by like 25. So Gonzaga is really good, and their schedule coming up, they play a couple of Big Ten teams, and so we'll see how they stack up against those teams. But as of right now, they look like the best team by far.
Well, the guys said they've never gotten a recruit like that, and they have their usual, you know, 20-year-old guys that know how to play defense and everything else, and they had this guy to the mix, and they're like, wow, type of thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're talking a little bit about how sports, especially amateur sports, is changing. I got kind of a whiff of this. Yeah, this is before, I think it was before 2000. So one of my buddies had a place in, we had a party. He has a big group of people out in Eagle Ridge, right? So we go out there, and one of the kids needs a ride home. And it turns out, of course, Audrey knows the kid's mother because she's the camaraderie among these horse females. All these girls that have, ladies that have horses all know each other, right? So the kid's the son of the horseman. All right, we'll drive the kid home. No big deal. It turns out the kid's one of these, kind of a star hockey player, even though he's like 12 years old. But Kevin is one of these, I'm sure you've met people like this. I knew some. And you still see him. The kid at age 12 looked like he was a man. The body's perfectly proportioned, you know, not the legs longer than the rest, where he's got to fill into anything. He probably was already shaved. But I think his parents were, I think they were into like 20 grand a year. He had already been to Finland twice and Sweden once. To play hockey at age 12 or something. I'm like, holy bleep, man. I mean, I can't imagine, you know, my parents coughing up if they had it, 20 G's for me to play hockey. Their idea of sports was, there's the park, go to it, right? You know, it's another world. I mean, hockey obviously is an expensive sport, but do you really have to go to Finland? We went to a thing at Brother Rice High School, this big... one of Audrey's friends, Kathy McGrath, she's a terrific lady. She's been on the training floor. Well, she says, hey, you want to come to this benefit at Brother Rice? And I go, sure. And I pony up some dough and I buy some tickets and all this kind of crap, like what you do when you go to those events. I said, by the way, what are we here for? She said, well, the soccer team wants to go to, like, Bosnia. Like, you got to be kidding me. I mean, I'm ponying up all this dough, so the soccer team has to go halfway around the world to get a game? It's shocking to somebody like me, Kevin, let's just say, but it's obviously not.
Well, and you know what? USA basketball is big, and so you have the, you know, the U18, U19, all of those kinds of teams, and it seems to be especially huge among women's basketball, where you get a lot of these young women that go into college with international experience. And not only do they have, national teams with 12 or 15 players, in those age groups, but they also have, international 3-on-3 tournaments. And so there's a whole other circuit for 3-on-3 basketball, which I believe is going to be in the Olympics next time.
I played in the 3-on-3 league. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Back when I was a little more
so
spry.
Anyway, you get, you know, and again, when I tell you that all of these, young athletes know each other, it's because they've all played together on teams. And so they get into college, and you know the first thing they do when you run out on the floor for layup line is go find and say hello to all your buddies on the other team who you've known for years.
Is it just because you don't? I mean, I'm not saying it was better, worse, or in the barrel, but it was different. I mean, we had that amount of people like in the neighborhood at the park waiting to. I mean, if you went up there, you better get there early if you wanted to play, and you better keep winning if you wanted to play. I mean, we would have 50 people trying to play basketball. I mean, does that just not happen anymore? I mean,
I don't know. That's a good question. Is pickup? You know, I'm pretty sure you can go to Rucker Park in New York and get a pickup game.
Probably you and I would fit right in there.
I think that's still a big thing.
You and I'd fit in. You think? No.
No.
Not even in the over like 90 group.
I don't think they have an over 90 group.
No.
unless it's those videos that I can't even remember the basketball player's name. Man, I'm getting old, Tom. I'm starting to forget stuff.
Kyrie Irving, the Uncle Drew?
The Kyrie Irving uncle. What was the uncle who?
Uncle Drew.
Uncle Drew, that's right. Okay, yeah. If anybody hasn't seen the Uncle Drew videos, they're fun.
They're actually pretty funny. I don't know if you've seen him, Chief, but he dresses up like he's a 70-year-old guy and asks to play like in a pickup game with a bunch of 20-year-olds, and they're like kind of laughing at him, and he sort of tanks it early, and then all of a sudden he starts playing better, and then starts playing better, and then pretty soon he's playing like Kyrie Irving, and he's dunking and everything. Everyone's like, "What the hell?"
As an old man, they have another one where Maya Moore plays his wife, and so she comes down to the park to get him, and they start giving her a whole hard time, and so. Okay, let's play.
Kevin, we got to shift gears a little bit because we got to talk a little bit about what's the world. But I every day I get the feeling that I'm talking about the stuff people don't want to hear. There was a movie once with pretty interesting the way it was directed. I think Jack Lemmon was in it, and it had to do with a mid-air collision. And when the movie first starts, the first thing you see is these two planes going bang. And you're like, what the hell was that? And then you drop back to like a month before. And all the million bazillion things, there's a lot, that had to happen. Timing, a stoplight, a train, for anybody to get to the plane and get to the stuff to where all the million variables had to happen to get to the spot where those two planes somehow ran into each other. That if somebody was 30 seconds longer in a can, it wouldn't have happened. And really amazing what it would take. And I look at what's going on with the economies and the markets, and I just see, it's almost like if I had nightmares, it would be these planes, like, coming to crash. I mean, we're pushing in this thing in one area that this area's got nothing but problems, and these people, the Chinese come out with a number that their numbers are great, and yet all of a sudden they got people not paying their debts over there. I mean, it's almost scary, the different things that are happening. The arrows flying a million different directions here, and we have this mentality that we've seen before. And first of all, if I see somebody putting a bridge up using cheap bolts, the last thing I want to do is have the bridge fall down and everybody get killed to vindicate me. I mean, that's not my. Some people, I think, wanted to. I honestly believe that Fauci and these guys are dying to have everybody, some big spike in these numbers after Thanksgiving, so they could say, I told you so. You didn't listen to me about Thanksgiving. I mean, I hope I'm wrong, but it sure seems like it.
Hey, remember when the Notre Dame students went on the field after the Clemson game?
Everybody was dying.
They're going to have a huge spike. Never happened.
Never happened. But you won't hear that. You won't hear that. What I'm saying is,
never heard the never happened. I just heard, well, that's a super spreader event.
Yeah, what I did.
And then it wasn't.
But I've seen it enough to where I look and see what the Fed's doing. I look and see the people now are putting in this economic team. And we're in the middle of the beer party. We're still cheering somebody showing up with three cases of beer. And don't worry, we'll fix it. We'll create money. We'll do this and that. Another trillion, another. And yet.
Yeah, and we'll all be barfing in the morning.
Yeah. But I mean, it's.
That's the way it's going to work out.
But I've never once seen, once it starts to happen, and Milton Friedman used to warn about this all the time. He goes, the first glimmers of inflation feel so good, it's hard to turn it off once you start. That's why you have to have a mantra that you never let it happen again. And it is once you forget about it, and once it starts up a little bit and it starts to feel good. I mean, right now, do you even want to remotely tell people that are in the market maybe for the first time or whatever to have it go up every day? This is free money, Kevin. You want to remotely tell these people that it actually could go the other way? Yet it's no different than 1968 or 9 when the market was going. It's no different than 2000. It's no different than 2007. I mean, it's the same thing. We can't. There's no limit to this stuff. I mean, usually when you hear people on TV, somebody will say, hey, I love IBM. It's trading 123 and I got a 135 target at it or something. It's fine. I mean, the guy's done his homework or the lady. And if they think it's worth that, you know what? They're probably right, Kevin. they studied it. I didn't. And maybe, on a relative scale or even on an absolute scale, the stock should be trading higher, right? But when you start hearing people like, oh, you got to buy like this one. Well, where should it go? Well, up. Up to where? Just up. I was looking at this. Who's the guy that had the Zoom the other day? God sakes, Kevin, they're 10 times revenue. Now these guys at Salesforce, maybe he was telling me on the way in, they bought this Slack. I'll tell you what, if all of a sudden, PTI stock, well, it's a partnership, so it wouldn't even, with a limited liability, if all of a sudden our stock was trading, $500, and I thought it was worth 10, I'd be out there trying to buy Ford, I'd be trying to buy 3M, I'd buy everything I could. Anybody who would take my script, like it was worth where it was trading, I'd be trying to buy everything, which is what I think some of these people are starting to do. I mean, did Mark Cuban take, what did he take? He took some, but then he sold it. He didn't get the only thing the guy did that was genius, I don't think he had it. If he did, it was a very short period of time where he had to sell it. He had to hang on to it. Remember the people who were so pissed off at Captain Kirk, William Shatner, when he was working for, was it Priceline? Where they paid him in stock and then he went out and sold it? When it was way the hell up, like in 2000? And everybody was pissed off at him for stuff?
Yeah, I don't remember the story.
Yeah, so they paid him. They paid him. I think they paid him in stock. And the stock went up, but they didn't require, and he, well, certainly didn't ask, for any sort of a holding period. So as soon as he got it, the stock was at his high. He, like, puked it out. All this dough, and they're like, all of a sudden, William Shatner sells Priceline stock. He goes, why wouldn't I sell it? It's way overvalued. I got paid in it. I want my money. Duh. And everybody was all pissed off at the guy.
No, you're supposed to hold it until it drops.
Yeah. You're supposed to think this is a little storehouse of value. I'm like, okay. I don't, was it Overstock or Price? I think it was Priceline. It was one of the two. But so what do you think?
Well, universities are known for this. Take a stock donation for the endowment, and then name a building after somebody, and then if the stock tanks, well, hey, the name's already on the building, too late.
So what if you're like the last guy in? Now, Manny Weber's going to have a big career. If not, his wife will make a bunch of dough, and she won't dump him. She likes him. You never know. She likes him. She won't dump him. So if he just...
What's the song about... Marie LeBeau. The guy goes to the witch doctor woman and promises to be her guy if she'll make him rich, and then says, "I'll have to look it up. I'll find it and tweet it." But the tagline is, "You're too ugly for a rich man like me."
After
she made him rich.
Well, what they say: beauty is always sought out money, and money's always found beauty, or something along those lines. But I mean, so if Manny Weber wanted to pony up, say, 20 mil for the Irish, and he's a basketball fan, what would he end up with? Would he get the Manny Weber foul line and the Kevin O'Neill basketball floor and the pavilion of somebody of the other place or whatever? How many names do you have to have? And as we can't even find.
I think Matt should get the back of the rim.
Yeah.
Named after him, so that every time it's clangs, they go, "Oh, that's another Weber rim shot."
That sounds about right, actually.
So, what are we now? We have somebody's floor at the Purcell Pavilion, in what the what's the name of the building?
The Joyce Center.
The Joyce Center. So, how far down the line can you go on this? I guess pretty far. You run out of buildings.
Yeah,
the name.
I mean, you got the Ray Meyer Court at DePaul. You get all kinds of things.
Question is, are we gonna, we surely have, boy, if you listen to the press, man, they're all over this football for not, like, canceling 2 weeks here. Haven't we figured out as a group, because I have a lady who works close to us, very, very, I mean, terrific, and she's not coming back to work again until, like, January, and I'm like, January? Well, she's got a couple of sisters that have new babies, and she, of course, aunt is in love with the babies, which, why not? Well, the sisters have it, like, choreographed out. Oh, no, if you're coming to see me, you can't have been to work for 14 days, even though the CDC now says 10. And they've got it, like, out on the calendars. And she's like, if she wants to go for this birthday, this Christmas, this birthday, she basically can't come back to work till, like, the 10th of January. I'm like, So when is that culture, or whatever you want to call it, Kevin, just like the market, when is that culture going to collide smack dab on with the fireman or the policeman or me or you that's worked every friggin' day since March? I mean, it has to. It just has to. I mean, it already sort of is. But what's the upshot of that going to be? Now, in Britain, they're shoving vaccines on people this week. This vaccine was proven. First test that it worked, what, 3 weeks ago? And we're going to give it to people now? I mean, what are we doing?
Cool, huh?
Yeah. I mean, does anybody have any idea? I mean, I my rough calculation is in Illinois, 3.5 to 4 million people have already had the disease. It could be a little high, but so does anybody have any idea that those antibodies that are going to be created by that vaccine are any stronger than the antibodies that somebody who's already had the disease has? It will last any longer. I mean, I hope they will. Maybe they will, but nobody has any idea, do they? And yet, we're essentially telling the 3.5 million people, yours aren't any good. You got to take this vaccine anyway. And when those people got every right in the world to say, screw you, I think. I got my own, you know.
Yeah, well, it depending on the country, they're not going to have that option to say, screw you.
But how do you force people to take a drug that's basically on the market a month? I mean, and that's right where we're heading.
Well, what's Lou always tell you? It's fascism. It's the small f fascism, but it's fascism.
Yeah, I mean, why all of a sudden are we believers? We have people that would never listen to any politician, anything. As long as you preach fear, now all of a sudden, you know, our politicians and our, I mean, listen to this guy Fauci. Every week he's got a different story. And he's so into whether you like the guy or don't. If you just look at it with a dispassionate view like I do, you have to see that the man is so concerned about proving something he said 4 months ago right. That's his only. It's like the Fed, you know, telling you
his reason for being. Yep.
But we're doing that with politicians. We're doing that with the Fed. That their only mission in life is to prove to you that what they said 6 months ago is either brilliant or stupid as it may have been was the right thing. We don't need that, Kevin. I mean, but how do you stop it? I don't think you do.
Well, you have to, A, be informed, B, vote accordingly, and...
Well, too late for that.
Throw people out of office that you don't want to belong there.
Well, we're 4 years away from that. So that's not an option.
Yeah, we are.
That's not an option.
Well, or 2 years in some cases.
By the way, your alter ego, Frank, on Monday was terrific. We were frightened about... organized religion, so I got several people emailed me. Some, is Frank an agnostic? So, of course, I had to call him up and give no one the crap about that. Well, no, I'm not an agnostic. Why do you think I'm an agnostic? I went to Notre Dame, for God's sake. I said, all right, Frank, what do you want me to say? You want me to say you're voodoo? You're one of these, you like the new no-fault religions so you can get born again every year and never have to go to confession or say five Hail Marys? So you want one of those, a church of what's happening now, as Tom Tracy used to say? He goes, well, just don't tell anybody. Don't say I'm Opus Dei. I don't want to be Opus Dei. are those guys still around?
I'm sure they are. Yeah.
Well, they booted.
Yeah, they are.
Evidently, Frank was telling me that South Bend was a big hotbed. I didn't know that.
It may be. I have not stumbled across it.
Well, I mean, I don't think about now.
I don't know what to tell you about it. I don't know a ton about it other than it exists and it's. It's pretty serious. I think it is mostly harmless. Again, when you start thinking, you know, about religion, whether you're religious or not, when you find people who have religious convictions and they live them, then, you know, I think that's, you know, that's just fine. That, you know, because people generally are well-intentioned and people will do a lot of good things because of their faith. They see, you know, ministry as a big part of what they do and they live it. So, you know, I don't know why everybody gets so hung up about them. You know, in many cases it may seem a little strange to you or a little bit, you know, not your thing. Fine. You know, I don't consider myself a religious person. I certainly don't consider myself a member of any religion. And, you know, it's not important. You know, I can live my convictions in a different way, but I don't care if somebody wants, you know, is a believer.
See, no, you're another I'm going to say, somewhat pretender like Mattie Weber. Even though you've opted out, the Catholic education is so over both of you guys, you wouldn't steal a penny if your life depended on it. You treat everybody like they're supposed to be treated. It's not like nuns.
Yeah, I don't think you have to be religious to be that way.
No, but I'm saying you.
But I think most religious people that I know are that way.
But I'm saying you.
I think that comes more from your parents, though, than from their religion.
Well,
what you're talking about, Chief.
I think. Nobody grows up like this. But literally, the Catholic parish that I was in was a community. I mean, the nuns taught what the parents taught. The parents taught what the nuns taught. And if you screwed up down the block, that parent was just as pissed off at you as your parent. I mean, it was,
and social life was built around the parishes too. But you also have to remember that, you know, when you lived in the city, especially, and that, you know, the whole lifestyle, we weren't as mobile as a society.
Right.
We weren't close to as mobile as we were. In fact, there was, you know, it wasn't that long ago that not everybody in the, had cars. So, you know, your social life was built around the parishes, and when people said, where do you, you know, where you come from in the city, what neighborhood, they'd always give you the parish name.
Well, you also had, I mean, I don't know exactly where your grammar school neighborhood was, Kevin. You never told me, I never asked. But I mean, St. John Fisher, a lot of families had 4 and 5 kids, you know, living in bungalows. Half of them didn't even have a basement. So the way you had to live together is nothing like now, where your kid could be a total bleep, but he's at home, he or she is at home, you know, and the only thing they're going to do is insult somebody over Facebook. I mean, if you didn't behave or didn't learn how to live with other people, you totally disrupted a 40-person class. I mean, we had a church with 1,600 kids there one Friday a month. You couldn't be running down the aisle. Everybody had to somewhat behave. You couldn't be a bleep head in a house with 5 people in it with 3 rooms either. I mean there's no room for you to act up.
I mean, there was a whole lot. You couldn't be that. And I'd say in addition to that, your families were involved in the schools. So it wasn't like, you know, you're just because your teacher sent a note home that you were in trouble. It was because, you know, mom was over at the school today doing something or other, and she talked to your teacher.
Yeah.
You know, so that was it. Hey, real quickly, just a couple of quick notes. You talked with Joel about whether Michigan would screw Ohio State out of its 6th game. I there's a chance the Michigan State game this weekend for them will be in jeopardy. And the ACC has managed to cancel all of its December 12th games, so it's going to play this weekend and then not play on December 12th. The idea being that it's going to have a 2-week ability to put its conference championship teams in a bubble and stage the conference championship game, although it wouldn't surprise me if they cancel that too, because that might be the easiest way for the ACC to put 2 teams in the college football playoff. In other words, if Clemson beats Notre Dame, they can both make it still into the playoffs, but if Notre Dame beats Clemson, Clemson will be out. So you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the conference championship game were canceled, but right now it looks like they're on track to play it.
And I looked up the rule, Kevin.
Their final game of the season.
I asked you the other day. I looked up the rule that if you don't play 6 games in the Big Ten, you're not liable. You can't go to the conference championship if there's going to be one. But you still,
unless the average number of games played throughout the conference is less than 6, and then
but it
they
won't
can
be.
Get in with 5.
Well, but I mean, I guess even Ohio State plays 4, they still could get in the national championship 4.
Yeah, they can, and they're sitting in that number 4 spot right now. You know, they're sitting there at 4-0, and it's conceivable they won't play. Now, I find it hard to believe that if it's 4 or 5 games and that's all they have, and other teams have played 10, it doesn't seem. You know, what they're really saying is Ohio State hasn't proved it's better than Texas A&M or Florida or Cincinnati. We just think they are, and that's going to be their basis for selecting it.
Well, the fact that they've got
actually no different than where we were a long time ago when we voted for national championships.
Well, yeah, it's, well, whatever. Kevin, talk to you on Friday, bud. Thank you. SP Futures down 1175, NASDAQ Futures down 41. Right back, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello, everyone. It's Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. Just Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 1250 now, the lowest we've seen them this morning. As they futures down 41, I think they were down more last night, but then they came back, and now we're slipping a little bit. We also have Mr. Russell Rhodes. How are you?
I'm good. I have a quick idea on the college football thing.
Let's hear it.
Let's hear don't wear helmets.
This would be a very good year to expand it to 8 just for the year, and bubble all 8 teams to make sure it gets done.
Well, it's how many days away?
What do you mean, how many days
away?
The
national championship. Why don't we just take everybody
the national the national championship doesn't have, it's, I don't know, like the weekend after New Year's?
Why don't we put everybody in a bubble somewhere and bring in two super spreaders and have all these kids get it, and then we'll be done with it.
Well, and then the other thought, and this is a thought I've had forever and ever and ever, if you expand it to 8, have the national championship game the weekend that the NFL takes off leading up to the Super Bowl.
The NFL,
nothing else going on.
The NFL's going to have another off week, right? Don't they have a week 18 scheduled, many in case there needs to be makeups with the COVID? I think they got a dead weekend, another dead weekend there, Russell.
Well, I'm talking about, I've always felt like that weekend in December would be, it's like they, just about every weekend it seems like we always have something.
Yeah.
Whether it's a Triple Crown race or Augusta or whatever. And that's one of the few weekends where you could slip something major in sports-wise. So, but that would also, I had this whole 18 playoff thing drawn up years and years and years ago, but that was the championship day game.
Well, the problem with that is
that free weekend.
You'll never go back to 4.
Yeah, well, probably not. They shouldn't.
Well, I think you should have.
I mean, this gets me on my second tier team thing. There's no reason right now that you wouldn't, and it would be kind of fun to put Cincinnati and BYU into a 18 playoff.
They probably get
their brains beaten out in the first round, but you know we have 4 basketball games every year, almost every year, where in the NCAA tournament where teams get their brains beaten out, but they're happy to be there.
Yeah, but there's a big difference between your brains beat out in basketball than there is in football. Yeah. One is literal, one isn't.
Yeah, I know. Well, and they wouldn't get their brains beaten out, you know? I mean, it's not like the Power 5 team that's gotten to go to the Cotton Bowl, walked off, or, you know, had everybody carted off the field, you know, with their literal brains.
Well, I think we should have a...
You know what I'm saying?
I think we should go to 64 teams and make these kids play, like, 20 games. Hell, we're not paying them anyway.
Yeah, just when Biden makes college for free, how are we going to handle sports? How are we going to handle athletes?
I wish
they already get school. You know?
I sure wish we had people that didn't. He was not the first, but I wonder who originally had that line, because Friedman was he was attributed to it, but he was not first. Somebody had it before him. There was no such thing as a free lunch.
No, there is not.
Hey, I have a question for you, since you are
the
professor, and you're going to be pissed off at me because this might be one area that you don't know, because it's an area that I don't know. So. Maybe you're with me on this one. When I was a Ute, when you talked about bank rates, there was the discount rate, which of course nobody really used because you were the bad boy if you went and actually had to go borrow from the bank. So there was a federal funds rate that banks loaned to each other overnight to cover their problems, which was a very vibrant thing. We still have that rate out there even though nobody borrows from that because this money goes back and forth to the Fed. And then there was the prime rate, which if you were, you know, the best customers borrowed at prime at 5% or 6%, and then you knew where you were in the pecking order. You were half over prime. You were three quarters over prime. And there was a decency or a logic to the system, whether it was perfect or not, God only knows. But somehow or another, we got away from all that. And even on people's mortgages here in like the Midwest, and I never understood this, Russell, how the hell did we get tied into this LIBOR rate? This is going to be a long answer for you. So now we're dumping the LIBOR rate because we don't think that's good, and we got something else here that they're going to replace it with, something called the and this even sounds crooked. What the hell's the name of this thing?
SOFR,
the secured overnight
finance rate,
which is use rates that investors offer for bank securities such as loan assets backed by bonds. Now that couldn't be crooked.
LIBOR is crooked because it was a survey.
Okay.
And I mean, where you called up, you know, a certain number of bankers, well, they still do it, but, it just, and the thing with LIBOR is it just doesn't, the people that had signed on to support it through the survey, they don't have to do that anymore after December 31st. And the fact that, they got in a lot of legal trouble for participating in it means they probably aren't going to support it anymore. The secured overnight finance rate is a market rate where it does cost somebody some money to be involved in it.
But how do we ever get away from prime rate, discount rate, and Fed funds rate? Why do we need anything other than those three?
Well, and I always thought that the prime rate was tied to LIBOR. I always thought they were pretty much the same thing.
Oh, the prime rate was around long before anybody knew what the LIBOR was.
That might be before my time. And LIBOR became popular, and this is my personal opinion on this, but I think LIBOR became popular because it was easier for bankers to manipulate.
That could be. But I mean, back in...
You know,
my Pullman days, my office was right next to the Treasury Department, Pullman, and which was a huge department. I mean, Pullman wasn't that big of a company. Oh, they masqueraded as a huge company. Russell, now you're going to say, how the hell could somebody
They were a small company that was a big deal.
The big bank with the small bank inside? But there was reasons for it. If they built a, like a refinery in Saudi Arabia or someplace, even though Pullman Kellogg maybe only charged, say they charged $20 million bucks for the engineering and the what do you call the people that watch all the construction, make sure you do it right, for all that stuff, the thing might cost $400 million. But because they use the import-export bank, all 400 of that million came through Pullman's balance sheet or income statement. Even though at the end of the day, they just got their $20 million commish. So the other 380 was like in and out. Type of thing,
so, like Amazon.
Yeah, so they looked like they were, big, but they did have a massive Treasury Department because they were financing stuff on virtually every continent between Swindell. you know, what Swindell made. They made stacks. Now, what's a stack? You don't know.
I don't remember.
Well, don't call it a chimney. It's a stack.
Oh.
See, some big, huge, like a power plant, I would call it a chimney. So would you. It's not a chimney. Uh-huh. It's a stack. That's what Swindell, and there's massive engineering that goes into those things. So they had Pullman Kellogg, they had Pullman Swindell, and they had a leasing company. So all this money was flying around overseas, but I never even heard of anybody ever talk about the LIBOR rate. It was always prime. It was always something. I don't even know when that came in. And the thought of your mortgage being tied to LIBOR.
Something that is a survey of bankers.
In London. Yeah. You know, how would that ever make it to your mortgage? I mean, I don't know. In 1980, nobody would have any idea where that would come from.
I honestly think that I didn't see the least of the I always knew that it was a survey, and I always think the best of people. God knows why I think the best of bankers, but they, I think all the banks decided they were going to tie things to some LIBOR because they had a way to nudge it in one direction or another when they needed to.
So if you have a 10-year adjustable mortgage, you're all of a sudden be adjusted on this new thing in that LIBOR, or do you have to sign a new piece of paper, or what do you got
to
do?
You have to sign a new piece of paper.
Okay.
And the way that I envision that, and this is something I've read up on a little bit, and the way that I envision that, and I actually described it this way, it's like at a conference. Up on the stage. You'll get like this long, drawn out, thing from your credit card company that basically, sues them legally if you ever try to sue them and explains every little thing that's going on with how the,
Russell, you know, have to move to
the side of the agreement is.
You have to move to a different spot. You're starting to sound like you got your head in a trash can.
How about now?
Now you're fine.
Okay, that's because the dog was pulling on the headset.
Oh.
yeah, I know. She's got something to say about SOFR.
Oh, all right.
She's going to talk about it, her days when she was one of the people that helped determine the LIBOR rate.
What she's saying is this isn't going to affect my biscuit selection, is it?
Yeah. She got extra treats for jacking that thing up on the day that all the loans reset.
Like Maddie's dog does. This isn't going to affect my walk. I'm not going to get shortchanged in my walk, am I?
Yeah. Yanking me in a completely other direction.
But now, is this SOFR, is this going to be all U.S., or is this going to be...
SOFR, there are other rates that are going to be used in other parts of the world. And there's a whole, I cannot remember what these two stand for, but like a couple of the European ones are Sonia and Esther. I kid you not.
Those are like your two maiden aunts.
European short-term rate, I think, might be what Esther is or something like that. But so SOFR is going to be, SOFR, the Secured Overnight Financing Rate, is very U.S.-centric. It's the one that's, and this is something that's been going on for about three or four years, because SIBO tried to get involved in it with a rate called Ameribor, which is a short-term rate that mid-sized banks actually used to supposedly lend money overnight to each other. But the Federal Reserve, and this is what'll really, get your spidey sense going, the Federal Reserve has really pushed and backed SOFR as being the rate that we're going to use and become the official rate on January 1st. And I think that anybody that has some sort of mortgage related to LIBOR, there's still going to be a LIBOR rate. It's just not going to have as many people participating in setting it from day to day. And if you get reset to SOFR, I think it's something that happens.
I think you're
got a notification, but you didn't see it.
I think you're wrong there, Professor.
On what?
Banks should stop using contracts using LIBOR. They should wrap up by the end of June of 2023 because it will no longer be published.
It won't be published, but it's not going to be supportive as of the end of this year.
No, I'm saying, but so we have many, many listeners, some of which I'm sure have mortgages that are adjustable based on LIBOR. So if one of our listeners walks in tomorrow and they say, oh, by the way, here's your mortgage, it's going to be adjusted on SOFR. Nobody has any friggin' idea what that means. Is there any cause of alarm, any cause of anything? Or are you just putting your you're dropping your pants and you're turning around and bending over for the Fed. What do you mean? Or is it everything okay?
Well, and I'm sure that it's going to get people to pay more attention to. You know what? We're both not 100% right here. The LIBOR, the transition begins December 31st, 2021.
Right.
I always had 2020 in my mind. I'm wondering if they pushed it back sometime during all of this.
Well, they say banks. Well, this is just an article. Who knows if this guy's right? He says banks should stop writing contracts using LIBOR by the end of 2021. After which,
I always had the end of this year in the back of my mind.
After which, the rate will no longer be published.
Yeah.
So what happens between the end of two?
Of course, it's going to. If you're paying attention, if you're paying attention, yeah, it's going to make you go, "What the heck is this?" And I'm sure there are going to be a lot of inbound calls to people's mortgage companies by the. Generally, by the average person that doesn't know what has happened with LIBOR and that probably doesn't really even know how LIBOR, where LIBOR came from for forever and ever and ever. I do know that even though banks don't have to, or that they are not supposed to tie anything to LIBOR after that deadline date, December 31st of next year, that a lot of banks have already shifted over to the secured overnight financing rate.
How do these two sentences?
And you can see it because it's being used more and more in the swap market.
Now, is it just me or does these two sentences leave you kind of an empty 18 months? According to the announcement, banks should stop writing contracts using LIBOR by the end of 2021, after which the rate no longer will be published. Contracts using LIBOR should wrap up by June 30th of 2023. So what happened? What happens if you got a rate between the end of 21 and mid 23? If it's not published, they just use whatever they feel like, or what?
I would rather have a SOFR loan than a LIBOR loan.
And that's gonna be published where? Just everywhere? I mean, Wall Street Journal and
What's the SOFR rate?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a market rate. You can probably. I mean, if you've got a Bloomberg, you can pull it up on your Bloomberg.
All right. Okay. So it's
and there's and really there I get a weekly email that tells me what's been going on in the over the counter swap market and SOFR there's a lot going on with things tied to SOFR already in the background.
What is the let's shift gears for a second. What is the
sure.
the current we had Mr. Jen Flanagan talking the other day. These are kind of real estate. Well, that's what he did was title law and everything. What is the estimate? I mean, obviously you're not the only professor over there. I mean, you're the strong part of your game is exchanges and markets and things like that. But there has to be some economics people over at Loyola that are either behavioral guys or real estate or asset kind of guys. What are they thinking? Have you had a chance to sit around? I'm going to say sit around and have a beer. How do you do that? Nobody wants to be next to anybody.
No.
But if you what are they thinking in terms of? I was talking earlier with Kevin. It's like. I'm looking like the plane crash coming together here. You have the piece of the economy that the Fed is feeding, and then you have people gushing over online sales are up 21%, but traffic in stores are down 52%. Now, they didn't say sales in stores, and they don't know what traffic means, but, I mean, why can't I get an article that says one made up for the other, it didn't make up for the other, it almost made up, it really didn't. I mean, it seems like we're constantly being left out of the little nuggets here. It seems like there's a lot of people that are in deep doo-doo. I mean, this reminds me so much of the 20s, where you had a depression in 40% of the country. Meanwhile, everybody else is driving faster cars, the market's going up every day. And, is there necessarily a meeting here or not? Can we just be two separate worlds? As long as you got the right stock, they're going to be going up for the next 10 years. And God help you if you're in any kind of place where you own something in the wrong city, or you owned a bar in the wrong spot, or a restaurant, or even a business or a retail store. I mean, as long as you're out of that stuff, are you okay? Or are they all going to? Is it too big? I mean, we ran with Mike on Monday, and he sort of agreed with me that he thought. 35 to 40% of the population. This is either in a recession or a depression. I mean, can the economy continue to gloss over that? And the answer may be yes. I don't know. But what are you hearing at your place? Because you got the mines over there.
Well, I mean, none of us are talking to each other right now. We're busy enough trying to talk to students. But it will, I mean, I feel like every Wednesday when I'm talking to you, we always get into some topic that it is going to have a day of reckoning. And I think I don't think anybody expected a full second set of lockdowns. And it might be why there seems to be more popular resistance to that than there was the first time around. Now, this thing's bad for us. We all should, sacrifice a few weeks and it'll get better. I think now that you're I think the reason that you see more and more popular pushback, and it's not just here, it's in Europe as well, where people seem to assimilate a little bit better when these things go on. The popular pushback, a part of it's got to be personal economics,
Well,
I think another part of it is the government's not, because of where we are in the whole political calendar, people that need it aren't getting any sort of support whatsoever. And because of that, you're seeing popular pushback on all of that. And that's what ends up happening when you have, I love the whole K-shaped recovery, where a bunch of us are doing okay and a big number of people are not doing okay and maybe are starting to worry about their paying their rent when they have to pay their rent again.
Well, I don't know how often you listen when you're not on, but to me the issue, one of the issues is even the timing issue, even the bumbling of the bureaucracies. I think we have way too many people, and Biden is putting people. I mean, everybody thinks I've turned right wing. I'm not. I just, it's the same mistakes that one side makes, the other side makes, which I don't. Mm-hmm. I mean, the total incompetency to me has gone for the last 30 years. It doesn't matter if it's a Republican or Democrat in there. The incompetency still rolls, I think.
Yeah.
Right? Go ahead.
10 years ago, yeah, and an underlying theme of what you just said is both sides are pretty much the same. And I don't think 10 years ago I would have agreed with that statement, but I'm starting to, especially when you have the mainstream, the mainstream politicians in different, different positions. And God, Biden is a lifelong politician.
Yeah, yeah. Other than his wife writing the book, or maybe some illicit money he got from somewhere, when's the guy ever gotten a check for the wasn't from the government?
When did he become a senator? When he was like 30?
Before we were born.
Well, close to when we were born.
Yeah.
I was born 6 years before Biden got elected the first time. You know the only election that he lost outright?
When?
This is a great one. And you know the person that beat him. He lost president of his law school class to Brodsky.
Oh, my God. That says a lot. That says a lot.
For people don't know, that's the former chairman of the CBOE.
I went
to law school with Biden.
I could say something about Brodsky, but I won't.
No.
But I will tell you,
find that funny.
But you know what's even funnier? Scary as it may seem. I'm an open book. The last time I ran for the board and lost, the guy I lost to is now in jail.
No, there you go.
How bad is that? Remember Al Wilkinson?
Yeah.
I lost to him. But now he's serving how many years?
What is that? I think we've just shown what it takes to win an election.
I would say you're probably right. but I mean, the thing of it, I don't think these people have a clue. I mean, simple stuff. Like, you talk to, you talk to young people all the time. The thing that out of all of, in my area, okay, I mean, the economics, I think people don't. It's stunning to me how many people I talk to have no idea about even basic economics or even basic. One thing you'll never find anybody knowing is cost accounting. Mm-hmm. I mean, do they even teach cost accounting anymore?
I emphasize it in my intro to finance class an awful lot just to explain how you can manipulate things.
Well, but I mean, it has it's a full course. I mean, it's
Well, but I mean, I touch on it. I don't know because I don't know what they teach in accounting. I try to avoid that as much as possible.
But what I'm saying is most people don't recognize that it's not whether a company makes money of whether they succeed or fail. It's because of cash flow. I mean, you could have so many sales you don't know what to do with them, and if you're paying your suppliers 30 days and the people are paying you 90, you're broke. Even though if you extend it out, you look fine. You look like Daddy Warbucks, but you're not because you're broke, right? Unless you could find loans and stuff like that. And God help you if you're doing business for the state where they never pay you. But I think we have people in the you hear stories constantly. I mean, some people on the show. I mean, Carl was talking about his daughter. I think his daughter's fine, but the how she went for unemployment in Florida and what she didn't get it for what, 6 months, and she gets like a she gets it like a a $12,000 check or 15 or something. Okay, but she's probably already living in Carl's basement. Her credit report is probably zero, and by the way, she's maxed out her credit cards, and it's going to take her years to get all that back, just because of timing. Even though the state's going to say, hey, what's the problem? We're working from home. We're worried about the COVID. You got your check. Quit bugging me. Well, it's a big deal. I don't think the people we've elected have any idea what I'm talking about or what you're talking about.
Oh, I don't think they do either. I mean, I think there are a few.
Yeah.
But they're the ones that have been in there for 2 or 4 years, and nobody's listening to them.
No. And they're saying, what do you mean? You got your money. What's the problem? Go to the bank. Well, okay. The bank's going to say when you got your last check, and I'm going to say 4 months ago. They don't want to see me. I mean, did anybody think? I mean, what would it take to walk into Harris Bank today, and for you and I to get a loan as a plumber or an electrician? I don't know.
They wouldn't give one.
No, they wouldn't.
No way they're going to give you. There's no way they're going to give one. What if you're you own a building and you've got four people renting from you, and that's what was covering your mortgage, and you need to get a second mortgage to keep yourself afloat. They're not going to give you one.
Well, people don't
have to, you know, my afternoon ritual is watching Judge Judy. You know how many people right now are going on Judge Judy that haven't been paying their rent?
By far the highest.
And Judge Judy can't do anything about it because there's a, because the government said you don't have to pay your rent right now. What happens to the landlord, and then what happens to the bank? What happens to the mortgage company?
Do you really watch Judge Judy?
maybe.
Somebody's watching her, man. She's by far the highest paid person on TV.
Yeah, she's still making like $50 million.
But beyond that, when I watch Judge, and this is just an awful statement, but I don't care. When I watch Judge Judy, when I'm, walking through the room and other people in my house are really fixated on it, I generally am rooting for COVID.
So is it worse than the jury?
That's all I've got to say.
Is it worse than the jury?
It makes me root for COVID.
Well, we got to go break here for a second. I asked Maddie, when you worked at the Score, did you have to ever were you ever at the new place?
No, when I was there, we were at NBC Tower.
Yeah, and I know what you're talking about. I know where you're going. I even know where you're going with that.
Well, that's like two places ago.
Where's the one over by on Columbus Drive?
They're not there anymore. That's NBC Tower.
All right. Well, okay. So I'm asking, were you ever part of the group where you had to like walk by the crowd who was in to see Jerry Springer?
Oh, yeah. Every like once a week.
All right.
Jerry Springer, Judge Mathis, Steve Wilkos, all those shows were filmed there.
How bad were the cretins in that line?
It was not good. Yeah.
I was in that line once.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
So I'd have to walk by and then buzz my ID card to go to the elevators. So I'd walk by the entire line. Right?
Yeah. Which is like, no, I thought... I know exactly what you're talking about, because I saw Anna DeVlantes once walking in there, and she was a dreamboat.
She is a dream, or still is, and this was 10 years ago, and she was a dreamboat then. I would see her all the time, all the NBC folks, Dick Johnson, RIP. But that line was interesting, and you'd always wonder, obviously these people aren't working on a Tuesday.
No, we were not.
One of the guys. Well, we're going to break here in a second. One of the guys, the bar across the street here downtown just closed because of COVID, but this guy's been gone a while. Who knows? He could be dead. But he actually went on there one day with his wife in one of these things where the theme, and the wife had no idea of, and this guy, if you looked at him, you'd wonder how the hell he ever found one girl in his life. Let's just say not an attractive man. He was on there with people that had sex with somebody other than their wife on their wedding day. The wife was not happy. How do you pull that off?
How do you have time?
I'm saying, how do you pull that off logistically? It's,
as someone that just did that, you know, 8 months ago or whatever, there's barely a spare second in that whole day. I mean, you're between getting ready and pictures and everything.
Clarification, you're just saying you got married.
Right, yes.
Day.
I just
you weren't the other guy.
No, I just got married. I didn't do the other.
you said who did that. I'm like, hold on. Now make sure we're clear here.
You're right.
The only way, I'm trying to think. What did Paul Hornung say? Don't get married early. You might find somebody you like better that night.
There you go.
God, S&P futures up 11. NASDAQ futures up 52. Be right back talking some economics, stocks and jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Right now. Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom. I just met Webber in the board. We have Mr. Russell Rhodes with us. S&P Future at 11:25. Kind of, we've been there pretty much the whole morning. As the future's down 50, two things we want to talk about after we're done with this. Mr. Webber's going to let us know what the Slack guys do. They're being bought by Salesforce for $27 billion. Plus, here's one that Russell's going to probably worry about. Mortgage demand from home buyers spikes 28%. The average loan amount sets a record high. It sounds to me like people are popping their credit card bills on the mortgage like we did in 2000, 2007. How'd that work out? Dow futures down 134. Over in Europe, DAX down 48.4% there. Now, these guys were up a bunch yesterday, so some very minor comeback over there in the DAX. FTSE up 27.4%. They've been the strongest of the gang over there in the last week or so. CAC around down 24.4%. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 13, call that flat. Shanghai down 2, call that flat. Hang Seng down 35, that's 0.1%. So they're very, very calm over in Asia. Yesterday, for review, Dow was up 185 after being up 350 for quite a while. S&P pretty much hung up there most of the day, up 40. It headed up like 55 at one point or 52. NASDAQ up 156, so that's 1.3%. Bonds actually made somewhat of a move. The 10-year rate is up to 9.91 from 0.86, where it was there forever. Every morning I'm tired of giving the number. Now it's over 9. The bond minus 0.5, actually minus 0.51. So that's a move to the upside there as well. Japan plus 0.02. These negative numbers I'm never going to get used to. Oil down 21 cents, 44.34. Brent down 15 cents, 47.27. Natural gas up 3 cents, 2.91. RBOB 121 unchanged. Gold, which had a big rally yesterday, is up another $7 today. 18.25, still a long way from that 1950 or 2000. We were, well, I never made it to 2000, but 1950. Silver unchanged at 24.10. It was up over a dollar yesterday. Copper down 2 cents, 3.44. Maddie, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still working on that issue on Stony Island that's affecting the Bishop Ford. There was a rollover tanker truck that happened earlier this morning, and it's blocking the Bishop Ford outbound entrance ramp from Stony Island. So crews are on the scene working to get that cleaned up. Apparently it happened earlier this morning, a rollover tanker on Stony Island between 103rd and the Bishop Ford tipped over, and there's crews working to get that cleaned up, and that's affecting the Bishop Ford as well. So that's the big concern right now that's affecting traffic down south. No issues coming in on the Ryan. That earlier crash at 71st is all clear. Stevenson and Eisenhower have been quiet all morning. Same for the Edens and Kennedy. Lakeshore Drive looking good in both directions. Suburban tollways are all quiet as well. One other issue in the area, it's out in the western suburbs. Route 53 at Maple Avenue, there is a crash. Weather today, it's going to be a pretty nice winter day here. A sunshine with a high of 44. Right now it's clear and 29 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 70 today. Right now it's clear and 43. In sports, UIC is 3-0 in the early college hoop season. They beat up on Valparaiso 66-50. Number 5 Illinois has a big one tonight against number 2 Baylor. That's a 9 p.m. Chicago time tip-off on ESPN. And there's NFL action this afternoon, Chief. 2:40 p.m. Central time kickoff between the Ravens and the Steelers. This game was originally going to be played on Thanksgiving evening and then was pushed to Sunday.
Is this NBC, Manny?
And then Tuesday and then now today. It's on NBC. The reason I pulled up NBC's TV schedule, the reason they're keeping it at 2:40, at least as of now, is they do not want to interrupt the 88th annual Christmas in Rockefeller Center.
Oh, that's right.
For the tree lighting ceremony in New York that's scheduled for 6:30 p.m. tonight and has been, you know, for the last 88 years on NBC. So that's the main culprit preventing the NFL game from being on primetime.
Why can't they put it on an NBC like sports channel or something?
They could, but they don't want to lose that on the NFL ratings, I would assume.
Well, what's the ratings going to be at 2:40 in the afternoon?
Well, with everyone working from home, it might not be that bad.
Well, nobody's in a bar. Yeah, that's true. All right, so tell us about Slack, will you? You're the one who knows everything about it.
Well, I don't know everything about it, but I can tell you that my company used it for a while, but only for our technical teams. So me as a sales, you know, relationship manager, we were on the regular Skype, and then most recently, for the last couple of years, we've been on Microsoft Teams. And that's
so Microsoft Teams. Well, Skype is independent, but Microsoft Teams obviously is Microsoft, right?
Right, yeah, and they're all sort of the you know, now everyone calls it Zoom since the pandemic, but there's all kinds of competitors to Zoom and have been, and I think most businesses probably use Microsoft Teams. But the engineering folks and the technical folks at my company were on Slack, and they loved it, and they thought it was way better than Zoom and way better than Teams and way better than Skype and all of them, because they could do more with it. Now, I don't know the details on what they could do differently compared to the other ones, but apparently it was expensive, and so our company dropped it and made everyone use Microsoft Teams, and so that now that's all we use. And Teams is fine. You can do all your audio and video chats and meetings throughout the day and scheduling, and it syncs in with your Outlook calendar very well. And, you know, like I said, you can do video or just audio. We also use it for our AIM, you know, our instant messaging. We use that all day, and Teams is the choice there. But Slack is just another one of those companies in that space.
So I think the legal system has jumped all over Zoom. I think if any lawyers doing any kind of a pleading to a court case or something, all they use is that Zoom.
Well, my understanding is that Zoom, you know, and it's really shined during the pandemic because it apparently has the best platform, the most easy to use platform. So regular people can jump on there and use it. Non-technical people, it's simple to use. I've used it, you know, and to me, it doesn't seem any different than the other ones. But But people really like it, and so it doesn't surprise me that, yeah, the lawyer, it's reliable for depositions and things like that, and so lawyers are jumping all over it. But the other ones, you know, we've been using Skype for a long time, and then Slack, and then Microsoft Teams. They're all kind of the same.
So, how do you know if it's worth $27 billion plus? If they're giving up Stack, who knows if the Stack's worth $27 billion anyway.
Well, you know, Chief, everything is only worth what someone's willing to pay for.
True.
So I don't like when people say it's not worth it, because it is worth it. They paid for it.
Yeah. Well, and then it could, well, I remember the dot-bomb stuff where people, what did the guys pay for, Yahoo paid for Mark Cuban's company and then never even used it? So I don't think it was
check clear.
Broadcast.com.
Yeah, yeah. Are you concerned at all about the mortgage demand being that high, when obviously people are starting to pour other debts into the mortgage, Russell? It seems like we've
It's the mortgage demand's not overly surprising to me, because a lot of people have chosen to leave cities after what happened over the summertime. And, you know, let's say you live in, you know, an apartment in downtown Chicago, and you're recently married, and you're going to stay in the city until you start having kids. You started looking at going ahead and moving to the burbs after this past summer.
Yep.
So I'm not overly surprised about that at all.
Well, Audrey and her gang and the real estate business have been busy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a function of something of a different trend, and not the. Although we could say the rioting was part of the was caused by the pandemic. There's all kinds of social things we can throw in there, but I think the social unrest, which partially came from the pandemic, is one of the things that spurred the mortgage market.
Can you guys explain to me? And I've had conversations with Dan and others about this, and I think everyone has theories, but I don't know if anyone really knows. I get the fact, like you said, everyone's been moving out to the suburbs during the pandemic. They want more space, want a yard, want outdoor, area. Totally get that. Makes sense. I get that because of the social unrest, another reason why people want to get out of the city. They're tired of their windows getting, bashed in, and their neighborhood getting terrorized, and then businesses going out of business and all that stuff. I get all of that. Then explain to me why real estate is still, at an all-time high in the city.
I'm not sure it is.
I think
stuff in?
Walking around in Lincoln Park and on the north side, and I'm not saying it's like this at everywhere in the city, so maybe I'm in a bubble, but nothing has come down from a pricing standpoint that I've seen.
Right, you're seeing offered prices. They haven't come down, but they're not selling either.
Well, that could be.
Yeah. And I was actually talking to a student that lives out in Logan Square. It's a graduate student, and he's got to stay in Chicago one more year, and he was actually able to find a place much closer to our Loyola's business camp or business school, which is right there in the middle of the Gold Coast, and kind of laterally moved to a little bit smaller space, but his rent stayed about the same. So I do think there's a lot of pressure in the rental market.
Big pressure in the rental market.
Yeah, and I know that the coffee room at Loyola, and I haven't been down there and made my coffee lately, but it's in a really funny spot where you can see into about a dozen apartments in a building next door, and all of them were empty the last time I went there.
Did you get your...
It was like looking in a new construction.
Did you get the new Packet telescope that was on TV the other day?
I did not get that. Yeah, it's so close I didn't need that.
All right.
I know.
I'm just saying.
And I don't have good eyesight. That's how close it was.
God. You're always going to, the phenomenon, I mean, it's almost sounds like funny, but it's not. I mean, 20 some years ago, guy lives in the suburb. This is going to sound sexist, but it's not. But, basically, if your son moves downtown, maybe you worry about it, but nowhere near as much as your daughter, right? I mean, you don't want your daughter, in Bucktown. It's okay if she's got her own parking place or garage, but you really don't want her coming home at 1 a.m, parking 3 blocks away and walking home. I mean, most guys, you don't want no part of that. Whether it's just old guys talking or whatever, the simple fact is you don't want that. I mean, you can say what you want, but the fact is you don't want that. So all these high-rises come up, and they're all condos. So families figured that, well, let's just buy the condo. The daughter can live there for 2 years. Maybe she'll even pay us some rent. Good luck with that. Or, and in 2 years, we'll just make a profit on it. Well, around comes, you know, 2008, and that ended up like a fart in church, right? So guys got eviscerated on these condos, right? So now what happened was all these places you would never dream were going to be rentals are now rentals. I mean, the idea mm-hmm. that Lake Point Tower, after three owners fought their way through the city council and finally were able to make the place condo, actually went back to being rental. They bought everybody out, right? And mm-hmm. which you would never even dreamed of 15 years ago. So now the family, I won't just say the old man, the family's saying, okay, Judy, you're going downtown. I want you in this building with a parking a spot inside with the doorman, and it's $2,200 a month for rent. I'll give you a G a month for a year, and after that, go find a boyfriend or something. I mean, it's not that crude, but it's sort of is. I mean, basically, yeah. I mean, it sort of is, right? Well, now all those people, they can just be gone. There's nothing holding them. So I got to believe some of these places got their occupancy. Man, you know better. I mean, their occupancy's got to be falling like a rock in these places. I mean, the last thing you want to do is be, well, my one buddy from Notre Dame, he's got three daughters. One of them lives right around Union Station, and her sister moves in with her because she wants to be downtown where all the action is. Well, I think they're both living back at home. Mm-hmm. Last thing you want to do is be locked up in a place without a balcony. Even the health clubs in these buildings are closed, for God's sake. Audrey says that, she says, you're supposed to know so much, you're on the radio. What do you think the number one thing is that people want in houses, and it's never been there before? It's now number one. I said, I don't know, a home office? She goes, that was it for a while. Now you've got to have something outside. You've got to have a yard.
Got to have a balcony or a yard.
But if you're a house, if the kids are going to be stuck at home, you want them to be able to go outside. I mean, for guys, mm-hmm. I mean, you imagine living in New York, where the whole place is apartments, and they close the playgrounds? I mean, kids are kids.
There are a lot fewer people living in New York than there used to be.
But, imagine when we were young, and we're 10 years old. Hey, Mac, we go out and play football? No, you can't go in the park. Well, what about baseball? Nah. what do you do? I mean, anyway, the economics.
I can tell you exactly what they do. They get a group of people together and they put on the headset and play video games.
Well, good.
I've got a 14 and a 16-year-old daughter, and the massive fight in the house yesterday that broke out had to do with something that happened within their group that they are playing a big video game on.
Well, do you put the gloves on, or do they just bare-knuckle nail each other?
No, actually what they did was they took turns coming downstairs and complaining about the other one to their mother while I focused on the Judge Judy case.
God. Wouldn't it be better if everybody was at school? The thing that bugs me about it, I mean, switching gears on you, this mortgage.
Yeah.
I mean, you went right to the fact why there's a demand for mortgage, and I'm not going to debate you on that. I think you're 100% correct, mm-hmm. but when people start adding their credit card stuff, the idea that you can get a mortgage at 3% and your credit card's 25% to me is unconscionable. I mean, if the Fed was when people ask me why I'm so pissed off at the Fed, it's because they have these ideas and they never force the stuff down to every man. So all the people mm-hmm. we know never benefit from any of this stuff.
But they don't know what it's like to be one of the everyman people.
Well, maybe we should get some different people.
I'm totally on board with that, but the system is rigged to a point of where it's very difficult to sweep in a bunch of new people.
We tried with Trump, and he bleeped that up.
Yeah, he did. I really, not him as a person or anything, but I really had high hopes that he would be the first. I was hoping he was going to be the first businessman president in a long line of them.
I don't know about the businessman part, just somebody who didn't come from there.
Well, this is what you get.
Yeah.
This is what you get. This just came out a few hours ago. I don't know if you guys have seen this yet, but when you have a businessman like Trump, if you want to call him a businessman,
I wouldn't, by the way.
How about non-politician?
Yeah. How about, grifter? Over 25 PPP loans worth more than $3.65 million were given to businesses with addresses at Trump and Kushner real estate properties, paying rent to those owners. 15 of the properties self-reported that they only kept one job, zero jobs, or did not report a number at all.
I'm going to say, Maddie, First of all, I'm not going to justify that. But if you go through the, I still have it somewhere. Somebody sent it to me. I went through the list of people that got over $150,000 in loans in Illinois, and I think there's like 50 names on a page, and there's like 275 pages. And if you go through there, this was first of all, two things. The entire amount of money, and I'm not justifying anything. I'm saying the amount of money, I'm talking motivation, that went out in the PPP program and in the $1,200 checks that went to everybody, was roughly 20 to 25% of the entire amount of money that went into the CARE Act. So there's like 70 to 75% of the money, we don't even know where the hell it went. I mean, how much are we giving to Boeing? How much are we giving to United Airlines? I mean, it's unconscionable. But there's, if you went through that list, you couldn't go through a page without picking out people. I went, you know, not that I'm into, you know, I don't have, I'll tell the truth. When the truth hurts, it should, as he used to say in the bus. I spotted maybe four or five, what's happening now, churches in, shall we say, the hood, that got all kinds of money. Not one job was created or kept. There's the example of one of the, what do you call them? Listeners sent in that they lived in, you know, a suburb like, Russell. I said, hey, I noticed our trash pickup company got $500,000. They never missed a beat. They kept getting paid. The trash kept getting picked up. Why did they need the $500,000? But I'm telling you, it's the way the thing was written. And Russell, you're too far away to kick me, but I'm going to say something here that I never dreamed I would ever have to say. It's if you were in a little small town, say hometown, and every morning some bleep went around and put $50 in everybody's mailbox, and you kept saying, this is going to screw us in the end because all it's going to do is inflate things, all it's going to do is this and that. You're probably right. But I would caution you, do not tear down your mailbox. If the $50 is going to everybody else, you need it because the car you need to go buy is now going to be 20% higher. And if you don't have the $50, you can't afford it. The way that thing was written, it was absolutely helicopter money.
Yeah.
And you had to hold your nose and participate, because if you didn't, the person next to you could afford something next year. As we're degrading our currency as fast as we can, you need to keep up.
You're right about that regarding the $1,200 per person, but I thought the whole point of the PPP was you couldn't lay people off or fire people.
I know, but
if you accepted it, which you guys didn't, and many other, you know, good faith companies didn't.
You couldn't do it. You couldn't lay them off or fire them up until a certain date.
True.
That's why the people were working from home, and I think you know some people like that, Maddie, got paid through the end of July, and then all of a sudden in the second week of August said, we know you're working home, by the way, you're out. Right?
There's no doubt about that.
So that's what happened. They essentially carried people to the end of July. And it's since July, we're now December, people are really struggling. The first 100 days pretty much was covered by the federal government printing money. But you were covered, right, for lack of a better term. So even the Tripoli TAP, if they applied, they pretty much didn't lose any money until, I'm going to say, July 31st, right?
I mean, that's probably right.
I don't know Nick's books. I would never ask, but the point. I mean, I don't think he would have. So, but there are companies that never had a problem and still got the money. But that's the way the thing was written. Just like the $1,200 check. If anybody's parent dies, and the Social Security check shows up the next day, if you go and cash it, it's a friggin' felony, for God's sake. But when the $1,200 check came for that thing, the government didn't, all they wanted was to get the money out there. I'm not saying this is justified. I'm just saying this is the truth. They didn't care who cashed it. Helicopter money means exactly that, Russell. Open up the helicopter door and throw it out.
I'm just saying, I think the helicopter money is absolutely the case in the $1,200. You're right about that. But the PPP, I mean, there was pretty detailed applications you had to fill out, and there was a lot of paperwork. There was certain requirements. That, I wouldn't say, is exactly helicopter money.
No, but I'm saying they never made a distinction. The way the thing was written, because believe me, we went through this. You know, I would never take a nickel. It wasn't mine, right? We went through this from top to bottom and had an attorney help us out. and say, okay, what if we struggle through? And actually would have struggled through anyway without the money. Hey, it's right there. It says if you're going to pay people between now and July, you look at your payroll last year. What it was, a month and a half? Dan knows all this stuff. Was it a month? You take an average of what? 6 months of last year, divide it by what? By you got essentially 2.5 months worth. So you take the 6.5 months, divide it by one, multiply it by 2.5, divide it by six, multiply it by 2.5. That was your number.
Mm-hmm.
So for you not to take that, whenever that's where the bill was written. It didn't
I agree with you on that. I mean, I think everyone should have taken it, but I think there were certain rules that had to be followed, and it sounds to me, without knowing all the details, that a lot of these companies didn't follow the rules, or at least the spirit of the rule.
The spirit of the rule was you don't fire everybody August 1st.
Right.
But that's not what it said. We didn't fire anybody. I mean, and you know, neither did the trash companies. The question is, did they really need it when they had a government contract and never missed a beat? The answer is no. They probably didn't really need it, but it's not what it said. You know, this is totally hard for me to have this argument, Maddie, because you know how I feel about the spirit of the rule. To me, I'm always on the spirit of the rule, but you can't be the only trash company in the state that didn't get the dough, right? All of a sudden, what if this thing got worse and you didn't get paid and everybody else has money in the bank and you don't?
I agree with you on that.
I mean, it's unconscionable that it was done this way. But to be the only person to be righteous, this is not the time. I mean, right? It's like the money comes out of the helicopter. I'll say, I'm not picking up that $100. And then all of a sudden
I don't need that.
Yeah. All of a sudden you walk down the bar and you find the beers are $15 and you can't afford it. Everybody else can. Right? I mean, it's unfortunate, but that's what these guys are doing. It's crazy stuff. So are you guys close to being open over there? Are you going to play basketball? You only got 30 seconds. Is your team
playing? Are you talking about
Loyola?
Talking about Loyola?
Yeah, is their team playing?
I actually traded emails with the coach recently, and they're not going to play basketball until late December because they haven't been able to get enough practices in that he feels like they're ready to go.
Because DePaul hasn't played either. Is that the...
Yeah, DePaul and Loyola, neither have played.
He said that the reason I'm hesitant is he told me some things in the email that I don't know if they're public.
Northwestern hasn't played either yet.
Really?
Yeah. Yet UIC has played three games, and Illinois has played three games, and, you know, obviously...
Memphis has played... They're getting afraid to play their fourth.
Yeah.
And they played three in South Dakota, and now they're playing... they're going to play one at home for the first time.
Well...
So,
Russell, take care.
Yeah, they're set to. He and I were trading emails about trying to. They need six more games. Basically, they're trying to find people to play, and that's what he and I were talking about.
I'm ready.
He said they're not available to play until I think like the 12th or the 15th because of.
I have some eligibility.
The amount of practices he wants.
Maddie Weber has eligibility.
Yeah, my team is looking for a game.
Okay.
We used to play high school, and some of us played college. They'd only beat us by about 80.
I never know.
You can't tell me you only play half court. They can't run up and down.
Yeah, well, we couldn't keep up with those guys full court.
That's futures down 10.75. Thank you, Russell. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.